Welcome to 74 Escapes new podcast series, Breaking Bread with Vera Lulu. I'm Vera, and I will take you on a gastronomic journey to explore food as an expression of cultural identity. I'll be hosting chefs and industry professionals from all over the world to discuss everything about this art form that really nourishes our souls. Let's start. On this episode of Breaking Bread, I'm so delighted to be speaking with Chef Ignacio Matos. Born and raised in Montevideo, Uruguay, Ignacio spent most of his childhood on his family's farm, fishing and canoeing, doing barbecues, family dinners. His mother's and grandmother's cooking has made an immense impact on his early years. After culinary school and a few uninspiring experiences in different kitchens, Ignacio met Michel Caravera, who he considers his first true chef. Ignacio's main mentor is the remarkable Francis Malman. He continued to sharpen his skills at Zuni Cafe, Chef Panisse, and later moved to New York where he worked as a chef at Il Buco. Now, the chef and owner of one Michelin star, the Stella and Alto Paradiso, he is truly an undisputed leader of New York City's dining scene with his fresh, bold, and masterful style, ingredient-driven approach, and immaculate presentation. And today, I welcome Chef Ignacio on this episode of Breaking Bread. Chef, how are you today?
Hi, how are you? Pretty good, thank you.
Thank you so much for being on Breaking Bread with us and me. I'm very excited to have you.
As well.
You're my true inspiration. You're the reason why I stay in New York for food. Please tell me how it all started. The table, grandmother Celia and her cooking.
How you all get started? I think it's, you know, culturally, it's pretty European. Like, you know, my grandma has an Italian background. My grandfather is Spanish, and everything just gravitate around the kitchen. You know, and you make it pretty much anywhere. You know, but yeah, we will always be around that. Like my grandmother's house was always the most reliable place, you know. We always knew that it would be food, she would be there. So it was very comforting and safe place, you know. It was always activities, it was always things that you have to do. So in a way, like, you know, it kind of keep you engaged, you know. You learn a lot by just simply watching. So it was a lot of that. It was like from time to time, there were like little taps. You know, if you weren't, you know, if you weren't really paying attention or getting on the way. But overall, yeah, it was just that, a very regarding and comforting place that it provides safety, you know. And we grew up eating like delicious stuff. In the summer, we would be preserving absolutely everything. You know, from making pears in syrup, from peaches, tomato sauce, wine, peppers, pickles, marmalades. So it was like, it was pretty intense and hands-on, you know. Like, at the time, I wasn't super keen, you know, as a kid, like, on the summer, having to work on my vacation, but you know, I learned to appreciate it, and it was really nice to see that. And, you know, like slaughtering pigs and seeing the whole process. So yeah, it was very rich in that respect, you know, and like grilling outside all the time, which culturally is like quite normal down there. It's not really, oh, we're gonna make barbecue this weekend. You know what I mean? You kind of lit the fire and make it happen, you know? So yeah, so it creates an interesting relationship with food that is pretty casual and normal, you know. It's not that special, even if it's really special that, you know, to keep those traditions in place, but it was just the day to day, you know.
So who was in charge of markets and grocery shopping? Did you have to come alone, and did you enjoy it when you were doing it?
Yeah. We will have to do that. We will either go to farms directly, you know, or like there will be a market like on Saturdays and we will go. I have to say, I wasn't always super happy to do it. But
I always love to eat, but I didn't enjoy shopping like I do now for food.
Right now, best. I love it. But at the time, yeah, you know, I was carrying stuff, a little bit skinny. Like, I always felt like I was going to collapse. But, yeah.
And tell me, so what is your love of brining? You tend to brine a lot. What does it come from?
My love for what? Sorry?
For brining.
Brining.
Do you think it's the Italian side?
I'm trying to think like where that came from, but you know, like down growing up, we brine things. Also, we do a lot of like we do brines to, like, if you're grilling like a big piece of meat, you brush the meat with a brine, and it's pretty much, yeah, salt and water. I mean, you had some spices, but you would brush like a lamb, so it absorbs the meat. It absorbs the salt differently. It also helps adding moist and allowing the caramelization to happen in a slower way. So it's always been brining here and there. And then, I don't know, like moving in different kitchens, you start exploring different things and seeing like other things and forms of applying it, where to vegetables, you know, like, or like you do it on pickles when you were a kid and you forgot about that, and then you start seeing it somewhere else applied slightly bit different. So yeah, it comes like, yeah, from the same place. It's a pretty ancient technique and quite efficient, you know, in terms of distributing salt.
My grandma used to have a vegetable garden, and she would preserve everything and pickle. And she had almost like a closet underneath where she would just store all these pickle things. And because it's so cold in Russia, you don't really need any refrigeration. You just store it underground. And there's all these pickle jars with tomatoes and cucumbers and preserves, you know, obviously jams and stuff. And it was quite magical. So it's quite a good memory.
It's amazing. No, absolutely amazing memory. For me, it was like, we would go under this stair, you know, in this basement, and it would be like, you know, so much stuff, you know, and it would last through the winter even more. And, you know, it's like, it's pretty fascinating that the abundance and the generosity that nature provides, even a small little garden, or like a pig, you know, slaughtered in a pig, or a cow. The amount of meat, I don't think people have any idea. I have like, yeah, crazy memories of like having to break down a whole cow and having to put away, like, it's
chicken's head off, which is
yeah, it's pretty, as a kid, it's kind of traumatizing, I might say so. It wasn't, but you know, used to, and you live with it, and yeah, and it's like amazing life lessons, and yeah, it makes a pretty slightly be different. So yeah, it's nice to see all that, the fruit of the labor and the hard work that you put into the stuff, you know, like particularly when, you know, going through cold winters, you know, like it's not really all the way to survive it if you don't put out the word that you need to put out at a certain time, that, you know, nature is allowing you and is providing you with the tools and the ingredients. You have to put out the work, you know, and in order to make it work, everybody had to do their part. Everybody had to collaborate. And a lot of times, you know, you see a lot of sense of community, you know, like at the farm, everybody would do their part and everybody would take their part with them, you know? So that was a beautiful thing to see, you know, everybody had a role and everybody would get a part of it, and it would be plenty for everybody.
You and I both worked in a few uninspiring kitchens. Do you think this kind of experience can really impact the passion and future of a young cook?
Like spending time in those type of kitchens?
If you start off where it's rather disappointing and uninspiring, do you think it can make an impact? Hey, maybe I don't want to be a chef, where it kills your passion in a way. What do you think?
Oh no, I think like kitchens, they always been a, in particular disciplinary kitchens and structured kitchens. Good kitchens, you know, I think it's interesting, you know, if you really want to learn, like at any level, any craftsmanship, nobody's going to give it to you serve on a silver platter, you know what I mean? It requires commitment, it requires hard work. You know, things has changed and shaped, but even if you go to a carpenter, the carpenter is not gonna give you what he earned. You know what I mean? And like, I don't know, forget about the idea of talent, you know, like these days everybody's like talking about talent, like it's education at the end of the day, you know. Then you might at some point, I don't know, of course, at rare cases that people have like a natural talent at a very young age. And it's amazing, but I think, like, you know, just that dedication and hard work, it is very important. And a lot of times, the kitchens, they serve as a filter, because the other way, it's just like, you know, it's a lot of energy, it's a lot of time, it's a lot of investment on these people. And it's no, yeah, it's no easy work, you know? It's not easy, it's very gratifying, but you have to love it, and you have to love what you do. And this has got to anything that you do, you know? I think it's very important to learn how to love it. So a lot of times, yeah, these places, they serve a little bit of a filtration. And then you can channel it in different places. Perhaps you don't need to end up in restaurants. I don't think that they're for everybody. But, you know, as we can see these days, they serve like a pretty essential role on modern society, you know, like the moment that you remove these places, like it's a whole web that is attached to it, and it gets broken, you know. And aside for that, it's like what it implies to socially interact, at least in places, I don't know, I think it's anywhere in the world, but particularly in New York, because we live here. I think, you know, we realize like how essential they are for like human dynamics, you know, and society. So, yeah, kitchens like that, yeah, they help filtering and, yeah, or inspiring people to want to do stuff like that. You know, for me, like, getting to a place like that kitchen that Michelle Kerber was there, like, I don't know if the cooking was, like, really, you know, these days, but
it was inspiring. It was,
yeah, I know, it was very completely foreign and new to me, you know what I mean? And, like, yeah, like hearing all the terminologies and like the words in French that they have.
It was a lot to learn.
What?
It was a lot to learn at the end of the day. It inspired you, and he was your first true chef.
Yeah. It was a very interesting character for sure.
And so right after this, you met Francis, and tell me how that developed, and where were you at this stage in your life professionally? I know it was, you know, okay, young experiences, but you were still just coming into your cooking. So tell me how it happened to you.
Yeah, I was very green. It was just right after that. I was just still in culinary school. It was supposed to be a 2 years program. I was in my first year, and this person that worked in the admin, like at the school, he saw me, my you know, my determination with it. So she directed me to go to this place but I never heard of Francis. Uruguay, in a way, is kind of insular, you know what I mean? And also, it was very early on, no internet. But yeah, I get into this very beautiful restaurant that I had no idea that, you know, but I could see and recognize beauty instantly. And then, you know, there were different elements where he was his, like, library, where his music, and I'm like, And the location, and then, like, the cooking is speak to myself, like, you know, it was of a very particular simplicity. Also, Francis came from a very classical French training, so they were like, it was a time where Francis still was merging and trying to detach from that Frenchy line. So there were still things on the menu that were classical, you know, like I don't know, kidneys and Armagnac. Or like, you know, the way that he was doing the. So But slowly, you know, he was detaching from that thing and developing this whole thing with fire. We already were cooking with, you know, these wood fires. And yeah, so I started working with him. I get offered to work with him in Mendoza. And I got put into a place where I needed to decide if I wanted to work in, if I want to go back to school, which I really never really liked it, or go to work in something that I was like fascinated by the entire world. And it was a lot of work for very little money. And I just loved it, you know? And I just like, I went into this adventure and like Francis had created, you know, his own universe. And, you know, you get, you know, you jump into this universe and
you feel very fulfilled.
What?
You feel very fulfilled at the moment.
Yeah, right? Mm. And from there, yeah, I started working for him. I worked for like 7 years. In a moment, I just went to other stuff here and there, but like a total of 7 years that I worked with him. And it was an incredible experience, you know? It was like a true mentor. It's a friend, somebody that I respect and love. And, you know, we have our own point of view to many different things. I love my time there, you know?
And then you spend time in San Sebastian in Galicia, which is one of my favorites in Spain, which is really like a miracle. Yeah. It's so hard to detach yourself from those ingredients once you come back to the US.
Yeah. It's a beautiful part of the world, you know, and I have family in Galicia, so I spend a good chunk in Galicia with my aunt, going to restaurants, eating, stashing in different places, seeing different things being done in different ways, you know, tasting new ingredients, things that I thought I was familiar with, but then you are like, hold on, I've been cheated my entire life, you know, that wasn't, you know, an egg, just like, you know, tasting the tortilla made in Galicia by whoever, you know what I mean? By, you know, the way that those eggs taste.
Very simple, but very sophisticated.
Yeah, for the simplicity that it is, it's of a sophistication
that
is.
Quality, ingredients, everything, even potato.
Yeah.
Tell me about your most memorable memories of Spain when you were there, outside of, you know, cooking as well.
I just love going to the market, you know, going to the market and having a sherry at 10 in the morning, you know, with some. I'm like, this is so good, you know, why do I need, you know, I mean, I'm not saying that I need to drink it every day at 10, but I just love the idea of, I wasn't familiar. I never really, like at 10 o'clock, I'll be having this with my aunt. So I love those rants at the market and the conversation at the market. And yeah, you know, and I love going to the market here, but it's a slightly bit different, you know, like,
very different.
It's very different experience, you know, like the markets there, they have their own life and it's like a little bar and the bar.
I went to Valencian market right before my flight and I spent 3 hours there. I went and I had a beer and like I had maybe 10 Galician oysters, like the side of my hand. And I took literally an entire backpack of jamon and everything else. And I was so lucky that they didn't stop me at the customs because there was a hand luggage and it was just packed with ham and all the good conserves. It was so good.
Yeah.
Those were the times.
You know, it's a tradition and care, like the same thing. And then the Basque country, you know, I think like the Basque. Yeah. They take so much pride of the heritage of, you know, being a small little place in the middle of Europe and having so much identity and character and appreciation for like what the lands provide them and a lot of care for how do they handle those things. It's really fascinating, you know, like the hospitality is like beyond attention to detail. And they're a very warm
people.
people. Yeah, very, very warm. You know, they seem a little bit aggro at first, but they're like true, you know, they have a big heart.
And I like the French side as well. I love Basque, you know, from Spanish and French side. It's a bit different, but it's really special as well.
Yeah, no, totally. Agree.
Biarritz and Saint-Jean-de-Luz, so much fun. So tell me, so you're in New York City since a while, and tell me what you love so much about New York.
I think it's like what we all love, you know. It's eclectic, it's electric, it's a place where, I don't know, if you have something to say, there will be somebody and someone listening to it, you know, like, because everybody is either, it came here with a need for doing those connections, or whether they didn't fit wherever they belong. And this place, it's a pretty, I don't know, I have a hard time with people say, oh, New York is so harsh or so intense. I think, yes, it is intense, but I think it's a pretty friendly and amicable place. Maybe I'm getting delusional, but I just...
It's also how you live in New York as well. It's got different vibes depending on the region, like where you are. It's also how you live your life, and it can be intense, but you can also choose not to be intense.
Yeah, and you learn that with a little bit of time. I think everybody jumped and came here and tried to make conclusions in whatever, you know, they came for 6 months, a year.
Absolutely.
It takes a minute to get familiar and get to know and understand the whereabouts. But I think it's, you know, it's incredible that you have this melting pot of cultures and everybody get along. You know, it could be like the perfect mess. You know what I mean? Like everybody somehow get along, and overall, like people are, you know, quite open and willing to, you know, to learn and experiment. I don't know. It's an interesting place. I think, you know, it's a lot of things that they could be improved. You know, it's been running funny ways. I think it could be a little bit more creative. It could be a little bit more friendly to creative people and provide. It could be a little bit cheaper, so creative people could move here more often. Like it used to be like that.
It used to be like that, yeah.
Yeah, and then it became this little bubble of wealth. But this still, you know, like it's at the core and at the essence, New York is meant to be, you know, greedy and have to it. So hopefully it comes back a little bit, no?
Yeah. Very important question. So how did you come to create your famous accent?
How did we come to creativity?
Creation.
What was the question? Sorry again, I didn't hear
you. How did you create your famous accent from Flora Bar? How many tests it took, and how was it born in your mind? How did you come to create it?
I think it's, I think it's at times you're just trying, you know, it's a different ways of approaching, like, you know, creativity, you know, it's just like a sandwich. I think a sandwich is more about engineering than like creativity, really, you know what I mean? You're just putting things together that are like very familiar in a very familiar format. So I thought of that of more of like engineering, like how it's gonna eat, how it's gonna feel. Wanted to make it comforting, wanted to make it accessible, but at the same time it needed to be surprising and kind of like, oh shit, you know? But yeah, it just came from a very technical approach of like providing comfort in a way that, you know, perhaps it's
comfort, creative, and it's got so many layers to that sandwich that are just very well thought out, I find.
I'm glad you like it, because I thought it was pretty delicious sandwich. And I have crazy respect for people that can do like amazing sandwiches, you know, like if they eat well and they are Yeah, they're not as easy as they seem, but also they're not as...
It's not a sandwich. Sandwich is, it can be a piece of art, really. It can be a fantastic sandwich or it can be a very crappy one. And that was one fantastic sandwich. Really. Have you ever thought about, unfortunately, since the Flora Bar is closed to my heartbreak forever, is there any way that you can offer it in any of the other restaurants, or it could be like a pop-up sometime where it could be just that sandwich, like a egg shop, quote unquote?
It might be a version of it. Why not? It could be a version of it. I wouldn't say no. Yeah, but sometimes, you know, you had to close and turn a page. But we always carry little things here and there, you know, and then they transform in different forms. And I think, you know, I think everything comes from somewhere. So, yeah, we might take it and turn it into something else at some point. So I keep you posted.
And last question before I let you go. What are your predictions post-COVID? Where do you see yourself, the restaurant industry? What are your projections?
The projection, I think it's going to be a pretty busy spring and summer. I think New York is going to be exciting at that time. It's been absolutely, you know, beyond challenging and very difficult, but we are ready to turn this page, and I'm ready and very excited for what's to come. We have a new project coming in soon. There is like a cafe, bakery, aperitivo bar situation. So we're working on that, trying to make that thing a quite special place. We have a beautiful, beautiful space. We started construction yesterday, so focusing on that. And it's a couple of other projects. This is in 49. It's one Rockefeller Plaza. It's on 49 and Rockefeller Plaza. Yeah, so it's this beautiful Art Deco building and build up that we're doing. So
sounds great.
It is gorgeous. So, and then we have a couple other things here and there. We're still like working on it. But, you know, keep working on Altro and Stella, making sure, like, you know, they're still relevant and exciting places and that we all want to come and have fun on it. So that's where we are, you know, like focusing on these two places, Altro and Stella. The new opening at is going to be called Café Lodi. And then it's something else that we're very excited about it. And it will be, you know, like a concept that, yeah, it's like a, yeah, close to home and close to here, and we'll see. Kind
That's
of a growth.
Another book.
It might be another book.
Nice. It was so much fun breaking bread with you. I hope to see you soon. Have a glass of Chablis, Plateau de Mer, and really talk more. And thank you so much for being on Breaking Bread.
Thank you, Vera. And absolutely looking forward to it. Okay?
Thank you so much. Grazie.